Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. Ooh.
Yes, more.
More.
The more part. Is hey, more.
I don't yeah, know. It is. It's more. Hey, Handsomeites, how's it going? How you guys doing out there in Radio Land? Internet Radio Land.
Yes. Internetio Land.
Internetio? Is that what we call it now?
I mean, yeah. That's what they're calling it on Tumblr, probably. All those that's hip internet tycoons on Tumblr.
Yeah, all those people making zillions of dollars on the Tumblrs. Tumblrs.
They're making zillions of dollars and curing cancer and sexism by tumbling things.
Well, it certainly helps, right?
Yes.
You tumble, tumble, tumble. Mm. Boom. Problem solved.
Yes.
Yes. So we got a great episode for you guys this week. Eric's not very enthusiastic, but no, I am. I think we do.
Well, I dare you to prove it to me.
Okay, I'll try. We have in Nervo Book Club. We are reading In Real Life by Corey Dr. Al-Jen Wang. We're going to talk about a shirt later on as well. A very particular shirt.
I wanted to bring that up, but we're going to talk about a shirt.
Yes, but it's. What shirt are we talking about?
Could you possibly know?
Could you know? You probably know.
You might know. Yeah, of course, if this is like way far in the future, you probably don't remember.
No, you probably went, what? Why does it matter?
The shirt.
Who cares? But anyway, first of all, before we do any of that, we're going to jump into the weakiest part of the flop.
I love that you're laughing at that.
I was going to say that. It's stupid. Well, the floppies part of the week. Time for weekly floppies.
I was going to say you're stupid, but...
I am. I just said that and then laughed at it, so yes. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty obvious.
Yes, but weekly floppies is part of the show. Eric and I will read the week's books, talk about them, tell you to buy or do not buy them. Simple as that.
So there.
Yeah. First up.
Position one.
Our first Marvel book of the week. It is Thor, number two.
It is not. Why is number two first? Number two should be second.
I decided on it first, so I put it there first. I went, that's easy. That's the easy one.
Yeah.
There's other harder choices.
You're telling me. Book. I guess so. I can only bust your chops so much.
It is written by Jason Aaron, art by Russell Dowderman, colors by Matthew Wilson, letters by Joe Sabino. This is our first glimpse into the psyche and performance and actions of the Goddess of Thunder. Mm-hmm. We still don't know who she is. And you could pick on this book for that it still doesn't reveal who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But it is pretty damn entertaining.
Yeah, it's a good read. You know, one of the things that I find interesting about this, and I wonder if it's on purpose or not, but it seems consistent with my own observations, is when... They've written this book with the intention of capturing new female readership.
I'm sure they hope to.
You agree with that statement, correct?
I'm sure that is a part of their goals.
One of the things that I notice in a lot of literature, aimed at women is they're very upfront about the vulnerability of the lead characters. Not that that isn't like important in a lot of fiction, but this character is a goddess who's going around beating the crap out of giants, mm-hmm. but we're seeing this, and I think thought bubbles in comics are a little weird and clunky, but
I was about to say, I agree with you generally.
Yes.
But in this instance, I think it works.
I don't know. It works, and it feels a little clumsy to me. But that's the whole thing, is we're seeing this inner dialogue to make this character, without having her break, making her seem vulnerable.
Well,
and it feels pretty calculated to me.
Well, I would argue that that's kind of Marvel's deal in the first place.
Mm.
Like, that's what set them apart from DC in back in the day, and it's still, I mean, DC basically just went, oh, we're going to try and be Marvel after about, you know, 10 years of Marvel doing this. And Marvel, I mean, that's, the Marvel has the flawed heroes.
Yeah.
That's what you, they have a flaw. They're not perfect. They're not Batman. They're not Superman. But I think that the thought bubble, generally thought bubbles are really clunky. Like, they had their time and place, and then we moved past them for the most part.
Yeah.
But
I think it's like a Claremont sort of device.
Yeah.
Possibly the only person to do it not poorly. You look so angry that I'm stepping on you.
No, I'm just going to say that I think that in this case, they use it just because they want to contrast more strongly. Like, you could put narration boxes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it contrasts between her speech and the thoughts. Like, you have them right next to each other.
Yeah.
I think that's the
purpose. Well, it's the whole contrast that on the inside, she's still, like, a human person. And in particular, like, a very vulnerable and scared human person. But I just feel, I mean, you're saying it's calculated one way, I'm saying it's calculated another way.
It's probably calculated in both ways, honestly.
Yes, but, honestly it is.
But, no, I still really enjoy this book. I really like it. I like how they're integrating her into all the stories that we're running through Thor, God of Thunder, with, you know, Roxxanne.
Well, I can't wait till they fit her into Axis.
Dear God, please hope she never goes into Axis.
I hope no one does.
We're going to talk about that later. I do like Malekith just keeping Thor's arm around. It's like, hey, buddy, got your arm. It's hanging out.
Yep.
Yeah. But the art is really nice. I really like Dauterman.
It's nice. It's no Esad Ribic, but it's wacky fun. I enjoy it.
I enjoy it as well. I'm a buy on this.
It's asinine to not buy this book.
So that's a reverse do not buy, meaning a double buy. Catch that?
You're confusing.
Double buy!
Okay, you have to shout things at me very clearly.
It worked. I got it. Next up, big number one for Marvel this week. All new Captain America number one with Eric's favorite new costume in superhero comics.
One of the alternate covers of this was done by old buddy Sanford Green.
Mm-hmm.
And he posted it to Facebook, and it looked really good. And I'm like, man, Sanford, you make this awful costume look great. And he didn't say anything, but I could tell. there was a bro moment there on Facebook. He's like, I know, man.
Written by Rick Remender, pencils by Stuart Immonen, inks by Wade Von Grawbadger.
That's a hell of a name.
That's a great name. Marte Gracia with Eduardo Navarro on colors, with Joe Caramagna on letters.
Von Grawbadger sounds like a count in Latveria.
He does. He should be like a sub, of Doom.
Yes, he's
lieutenant or something.
Yes.
But this comic book is very comic booky.
Yeah.
I'll get into it later after we finish talking about the books. I actually enjoy this. I think it's just because I read Axis. I in an abusive relationship, I had to go back to Axis. I read Axis, and this Captain America. This is so much better than the one in Axis. So it's just a lot of punching, a lot of fighting Batroc. I hate that they gave Ian the name of Nomad. That's the worst.
That really doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
I mean, I understand why. I mean, they wanted to revive that name for some reason, but it's a terrible name. In the first, it doesn't work very well. But I don't know. It's a very there's a lot of action. I think they just wanted to keep a very simple formula. They knew a lot of people would be reading this, and I like it well enough. I think it's a good first issue in that it does. I like the reveal at the end, the final page. It's not really a reveal, I should say, but yeah. I don't like that Batroc's just dead now, but I like Batroc. Maybe he's probably didn't die. He's probably fine.
He was saved by that mustache.
The mustache grew wings and flew and carried him off to safety.
It was like a giant butterfly.
Do you like this, Eric? Did you like it? Oh, that's a heavy one.
Yeah, it was. It was weighty. I wish I liked it more than I did. No, I have the same problems that you do, but I don't feel as warm and fuzzy about it. It's not horrible. It's not the worst thing I've read this week. I want to like Sam in his terrible costume. I want to love this. I don't love it. It is really nicely drawn.
Yeah, it's nice looking.
It is. I mean,
MMN is, he's great. He's a very good artist.
Yeah. Remender and his fucking quips.
This is not, again, I think a lot of it is I read Axis. Yeah. And this looks like fucking gold.
Yeah, I guess so.
Compared to, oh my god.
This is once you...
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. That this makes me feel better about the potential I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. All you have to do is you can buy any terrible comic that you want. Just slam your head in a car door. And then compared to that, the comic's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going on with Remender and this stuff. This is a no-frills operation, Sam. Are you having frills? What the shit is this?
I don't know. I honestly don't.
And maybe if it's a thing that... Maybe if it... I don't know. Maybe it'll seem more invisible in the long term. But this feels like such a weird radical shift.
I really like Sam's relationship with Nomad.
Yes.
I hate that name so bad. But I really like their relationship. I like the back and forth between them. I think that's... Because Ian's a new... Nomad, excuse me, is a new character, new-ish. He hasn't really interacted with the Marvel Universe as a whole. You know, trying to deal with... I'm willing to see where this goes. I'm a buy. I'm above average buy. This is not an enthusiastic buy, but it is a buy.
I'm a buy for the Sanford Green cover.
But nothing else?
If just saying I'm a buy for this makes you want to throw up in my mouth a little bit.
Then say do not buy. You can't know.
No, beholden. It's not that.
You're not beholden. Okay,
that's the most reluctant buy ever.
You sure?
But yes.
You sound resistant.
I am very resistant.
Okay.
I'm getting Stockholm syndrome from this book.
I don't think it's that serious, is it?
You sound like you have Stockholm syndrome from Rick Remender.
I do.
That you love this book.
I don't love it. I like it. I enjoy it. I don't know. I don't love it. Love is a very strong word. I did not love this book. So next up, we're moving to DC. This is our the first one is actually a Vertigo book, but
same difference, right?
Same. I mean, they own Vertigo, and it lets us read Vertigo books without making them indie books because they're not really. I don't consider them indie books. It's Vertigo. It's owned by DC. It's not. This is The Kitchen, number one, written by Ollie Masters, art by Ming Doyle, Jordi Belair, doing colors. Crazy. She did colors for a book. Clem Robbins on letters. The premise of this is basically, hey guys, you remember that movie Goodfellas? Now, remember that part of the movie where they all went to jail? Like it was the middle part. You know, everyone went to prison for something. And they were in there for 5 or 6 years. Imagine then we started following what happened with their wives, and their wives decided to, like, take up their, like, all their cons and all
their shakedown operations.
Yeah, they decided to do that. That's what this book is. Eric, I want to hear what you think about this book. That much, right?
Yeah, feels kind of empty, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
We're going to shoot this guy. We have Farrah Fawcett hair. The end.
Is that it?
Honestly, I'm not getting a whole lot from it.
No, there's not a whole bunch in it.
No, there's not. I'm really glad I'm not the only one that's like, did something happen in this book? I don't know. Are we really so hungry for female-led literature that we're willing to
But
I don't know. We're willing to take a story with like basically no content.
Hey, Eric, if you're hungry, maybe you should read The Kitchen.
Very good. Congratulations.
Yeah, this book's not very good. I didn't like it that much.
I don't like despise it.
No,
there's nothing in it that you're reading it and you're like, well, this was written by a 6-year-old child. And
there was never at one point in this book that I went, knew exactly what was going to happen.
There's nothing compelling. There's nothing that you don't see coming. There's nothing really all that interesting. And I'm really curious why two of the women look Hispanic on the cover. They look like they're Latinas on the cover. Like,
I don't know.
That looks like a blonde Latin woman. She's even wearing like the big hoop earrings. That's really confusing because the whole thing is they're Irish, right?
I don't know.
Their husbands are like Irish gangs,
well,
right?
Their husband. I don't know what their nationalities are, but because they never really, you don't know what their maiden names are or anything. But it doesn't matter. It's not. This book is very. Here's A to B to C. Exactly what you expect.
Nah. Except for a little bit, they're except for that little bit when they're Latina. That was a weird sort of sidetrack there.
I'm a do not buy. I mean, the art is.
The art's nice.
The art is good. Yeah, but I don't. The art is not compelling enough for me to read this book alone.
No, it's not. It's not selling the book to anybody.
I mean, it's not, and it's not like the artist says something crazy. Like they're not given much. I mean, they're just like, here's people. Here's a dude with a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the book could have taken a couple more revisions, a little bit more editing. Doesn't quite have enough punch.
So double do not buy.
Yeah.
Kitchen number one.
I'm down with that.
Next up. Batgirl, number 36. There are credits in this book. I don't know. Oh, here they are. Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher, writers. Babstar on art. Cameron Stewart doing the breakdowns. Maris Wicks, colors. J.K. Fletcher, letters. How did you enjoy Batgirl fighting anime motorcycle chicks?
Not as much as you would think.
I was gonna say, this seems like it's, like, I don't know how you could not, seems like it's up your alley, I should say. No?
I don't know what it is. This book felt like it was trying too hard. I don't know what it is.
I think, like, okay, everyone playing the Handsome Boys Comics Hour drinking game at home, drink. Eric said something's trying too hard.
Do I really say that a lot?
You do say it a lot.
Okay, this is news to me.
Yeah, I it's a trend. The two heaviest criticisms you have for comic books. Ones that are not really bad ones, but ones that are like above average. You say it's trying too hard and it's pretentious. Those are your two.
Pretentious, I buy it. I don't remember ever saying trying too hard.
Trying too hard. It's always something along those lines.
Definitely, I get pandering, and that would have been probably another thing that I would have said.
Yeah, I really like this. Despite it, I see that in it little bit. Obviously, they're aiming for it very specific. They like the, again, with the continued apps and the fact, you know, what kind of connector do you want to use for this external hard drive?
That made me sick.
I knew. God. I was like, I was like, Eric's gonna hate that.
Of course I do. And,
okay, but for the average person reading this,
they're not even using fucking Macintoshes.
I know.
It's fucking Macintosh proprietary connection. If you're going to go out of your fucking way to act like you're a fucking nerd, this is 10 gigs per second throughput. If you're going to go out of your way to do that, get your shit fucking right. Ooh. Jesus.
I enjoy this. I like it a lot, despite its those leanings, those tendencies in it. I like her fighting. Like, I was getting Running Man flashbacks when she's fighting these people on the these chicks on the motorcycles. Mm. I like her flashback to her father. You know, developing her as a hero. Well, and pretty, you know, kneeing people in the face off motorcycles. Pretty cool. So. I'm a buy. I really like this. Art's still great.
God, Babs can draw. This is an amazingly beautiful book. I wish I didn't have the really weird, unfair criticisms that I have of it, because it does color it bad for me. But this is exactly what you think it is.
Yeah, and I like it. It's good.
No, it's going to continue to perform. I don't know. There are things without it that don't sit right with me, but it's glorious. That I really shouldn't say anything bad about it, but I'm going to, because that's what I do.
That's a double buy on Batgirl number 36.
Robbie, you're pretentious and you try too hard.
Sometimes.
I love that you're fucking all analyzing me. This is so good.
No, it's just, you know, I talk about comic books every week. I notice things. All right. This is an interesting thing right here. The last
book. An interesting thing? Oh, my God.
An interesting thing. We'll talk about the comic book itself. I just want to explain why I picked this book. I had no idea what was inside. First, originally, I don't know if you looked at the notes before I changed it, because originally I had Copperhead in here.
You really wish you had put Copperhead.
Well, I was going to read it anyway. I figured if you had read it, I don't know. Either way, I read it anyway, so I can at least talk about it a bit. But I saw this on the Free Comic Books Day. They have on their Facebook page, they posted this. They posted the covers, and I'm like, wow, that's an interesting cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the blurb, and I thought, well, that's pretty. I like, it felt very Supreme to me.
Describe what the blurb said that grabbed you.
Well, it just, like, the video said, like, I don't know. It was very something about, I think the cover was the thing that actually grabbed me most, but I was like, well, that's interesting. Like a Superman-esque figure, but born in the death of billions of people.
Yeah.
I was like, that's an interesting setup. First, but I, even before I read this, I'm like, that's a terrible title.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awful title for a comic book. The Bigger Bang.
Yes, it's about as bad as it can be.
It's a really bad title. The name of the hero in it is Cosmos. So I understand why they didn't pick Cosmos, because we just had a TV show called Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think you could add something. I'll do the credits and then I want to know exactly what you think about this, Eric. I have a feeling I know what you think about it, but I want to.
I could sum it up in a couple of words.
Wait.
Please count us in.
Yes. Written by DJ Kirkbride, illustrated by Vasilis Gotzilis. I like, that's a name. Lettered by Frank Svetkovic, I guess. And, edited by Justin Isinger. Now, Eric, go ahead.
It did not take me long to really formulate an opinion on this book.
I figured it wouldn't.
I was reading the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
The first sentence is, according to the sometimes fanatical cult of science, I stopped reading it right there, and I was like, fuck this book, and it's stupid asshole. That's the shittiest thing I've ever fucking heard. I don't know what the hell made these people think they should do a comic book. This is a fucking abortion of a comic. This is like a bunch of kids' drawings on notebook paper that some colorist has tried like hell to rescue. This is shameful. This should never have been printed.
I think he did the coloring himself.
Well,
it says illustrated by.
That's all well and good.
I don't think I'm quite as down as you are.
This is garbage.
I was like, there's like a 1% chance that he really likes it.
Hell no.
I know.
There
I
was
like,
a less is than 1% chance.
Less than one chance. I know. I you don't like the silliness of it. No, you hate the art. Is it? Okay.
There's not. Not every page I hate.
Okay.
Not every page I hate, but this is like the worst of it. Is like the it's like who's that? Is not Jim Kelly? Kelly Jones, that guy that does Long Ear Batman.
Yeah.
Is it Kelly Jones?
I believe so. Yeah.
And like, the Max. What's his name?
I can't remember.
Sam Keith. This is like the worst of their artwork without all the polish of good inking. And it's like Bill Plimpton drawings, who I love Bill Plimpton, but he's animating these things.
Mm.
This is...
Let me ask you a question then. Different artists, what do you think? If they put a typical comic book artist on this.
Then it's
or even
the,
a, or even a, or even a good artist. Say we had Stuart Immonen of a
then it's
Captain
a well drawn, incredibly dumb comic.
Okay.
I there's no aspect of this that works. I wish this had never been made.
Wow. All right.
I mean, this is something that I wish has never been published. This hurts me. To read this, I don't know. This is clearly the meanest thing I've ever said on this podcast. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to be halfway on this. This just does not work for me.
Well, Michael Allred says, I eat this stuff up. Bigger banging cosmic comics.
You know, I saw that and I'm like, I'm either going to love this or hate it. And it certainly went one of those two ways.
I think there is a very particular audience for this. I don't think it's us. I'm a do not buy in this as well. This is not it. The art I can forgive. I can just dismiss it as, you know, it's weird. But the tone is all over the place.
Yes, it is.
Like, it's, you know, it tries to go like ridiculous slapstick, and then try and also make like, oh, billions of people dead. I'm like, you gotta do one or the other. You cannot mix that stuff up unless you're like the most talented of writers.
You know what it reminds me of is the Superannuated Man.
Along those lines.
It's that kind of thing where you're like, I'm gonna do a comic and make it all weird, you know, and it's gonna be avant-garde, which, you know, 9 out of 10 times when you think you're making something avant-garde, you're just making garbage. This is garbage.
To be fair, I think that's even unfair to this to Superannuated Man.
It is. I like it much better than this. Like, I think Superannuated Man, I was like, I don't like this. This is something for people who are like, oh, I like stuff that's weird. Like, I could see someone buying this. I want my money back on this. Like, if I ever see these people at a con, I'm going to be like, hey, fucking owe me $4. Screw you.
All right. I hope we don't run into those guys.
I really hope I don't. I will be a lot nicer to them in person. But Jesus.
Probably just not talk to them.
I will probably not. I don't talk to James O'Barr.
And you had the opportunity.
I did. And I'm not going to talk to him about his woman in the refrigerator story.
Yeah.
I walk by him and go, cat in the hat! Cat in the hat! Jesus Christ.
Okay, so that's a double. If you guys aren't keeping track at home, that's a double do not buy on Bigger Bang number one. That's probably the most enthusiastic double do not buy ever.
I feel dirty, coming down
vitriol for that was, I think, only matched by my anger towards X-Force.
Or Forever Evil.
I really hate Forever Evil.
I think you were angrier about Forever Evil, though.
I was just tired from after I read X-Force. I was just like, what is comic books doing to me? Yeah. So I read a whole bunch of other comics books this week. I know you did as well, Eric, right?
I bought a whole bunch of comic books and then sort of forgot to read a couple of them. But yeah, we can talk about some books. We probably read some of the same ones.
You read Wild's End?
I totally read Wild's End.
It was good.
It was good, but I keep thinking this is rising action.
Yeah,
not a whole lot happens.
It feels a lot bigger than only if it's ending at 6 issues. I'm like, they're gonna have to.
Yeah.
The final 3 issues are gonna have to be like big things.
Yes, this was like 1 and 2 stuff happened. This was like, let's walk around in the woods and talk to each other. It's like a bunch of panels of them leaving the house, like 3 pages of them leaving the house. That's really slow storytelling.
It just seems strange that if it's going to be a 6-issue mini, that they don't. I was expecting something big to happen this issue, and then I don't know. But it was still good. I still enjoyed it a lot.
And that's kind of one of the problems of writing, you know, writing a 6-issue arc and blocking it all out, and each issue is it's going to be part of a larger arc. It's just what it is. You know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of people's criticisms of the last 2 Game of Thrones books is their, you know, their act 2 stuff, you know? It's rising action. It's not climax. It's not anything interesting.
What else did you read?
Well, I bought Teen Dog number 3 and Copperhead number 3, both of which I was very excited to read. Did not. I think I'm actually very lucky that I read all of our floppies this week, because I was just waking up at like 1 in the morning, like, well, I'm going to read comics.
Jesus. That's very early.
That is the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's not morning at all. You can't categorize one as morning.
No, I read comics until I went back to sleep.
Okay. I'm happy you went back to sleep.
I am happy as well. That was on a work night.
Yeah.
I prefer to sleep.
I also read Copperhead. It's still very good. You guys should go buy that book if you're not.
Awesome. Don't spoil it for me.
No, won't spoil it.
You can tell me it's awesome. I appreciate that.
It's awesome.
That.
Yeah, it's very good.
Now I'm excited. I hope to see more about that weird guy that what killed those people.
Yeah, you see more of him.
Good. He seems amazing.
He's cool.
It's filled with delightful characters. I love how the deputy is like, I don't know, he's like big burly Kiff from Futurama.
He's pretty good. It's everything. It's all good. I don't want to tell you anything. It's good.
I'm looking forward to it. I feel really stupid that I didn't read it.
I read Captain Marvel 9, new one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the cover. It has her painted up like David Bowie.
I did see that and I almost bought it just for that cover. But I would have been a really dumb waste of $4 because I don't hate the book, but I've not really terribly enjoyed it. It's too many jokes about Flerkins.
Well, there's no Flerkins in this one.
No Flerkins.
It's actually, I was very impressed by it just because it's a very different book than that first Captain Marvel run.
Hmm.
That's what this is. It's not, if I think that's the thing, if you go in reading this expecting that, this is not that. This is definitely, I think this is, it's very interesting that Kelly Sue, when I talked to her at Dragon Con, we briefly mentioned the space adventures of the new Captain, new Captain Marvel, and she said, you know, it's very influenced by, I want to say, Buckaroo Banzai.
Really, Buckaroo Banzai? I thought she said...
Or was it Buck Rogers?
Buck Rogers.
Maybe Buck Rogers.
Flash Gordon?
I think it was not Flash Gordon.
Anyway, it's influenced by a thing and written by a person.
Yes.
This is really good information.
And very good radio. They... But they end up on a planet where they're involved in some dispute, but everyone talks in rhyme. Hmm. So, roughly two-thirds of this book is in rhyme. Like, everybody. Even Cap.
That's good.
It's really good. It's entertaining. I enjoyed it a lot. It's fun. I also read Superior Iron Man number 1, which I almost chose to read instead of Captain America, but...
Yeah, I think you made the right call, but I really wanted to read it as well, but did not want to spend $84 on comics this week.
I probably spent too much, but I think there's a reason they called it the Superior Iron Man because it's not as like so obviously aimed at a 15-year-old kid as Superior Spider-Man was, but it certainly is very much like, look at this, like it's Tony Stark, but he's like a little bit loose and wild. He's drinking, you know, he's carousing, you know, he's kind of like the same kind of feeling where he's trying to do good, but it's not really, there's something wrong there. And it just feels, it's competent. It looks nice. I just don't think I'm going to be reading it.
So not Superior.
I don't.
They should have called him the Purple Iron Man.
Yeah. This is a spoiler. I'm assuming you're not going to read it and you don't care if I did tell you.
Yeah, you could spoil this book for me. It's okay.
I think it was kind of set up in Axis where he sets up like, he releases the extremists on San Francisco so everyone can look exactly how they want to, you know, through an app on their phone. But then there's a scene in this book where he's at like a pool party and everyone's gorgeous because they've all remade themselves. And then suddenly, the app, the free trial period expires, and then everyone looks normal again, and they're all upset. And you find out, it's $100 a day subscription fee. I was just like, first of all, Tony Stark would not charge everyone $100 a day because that's too much. You'd bleed people dry much too quickly.
Yeah,
you would charge. He's a genius. He would charge someone $10 a day or $5 a day, which is a lot, but people could afford it theoretically.
No, especially, Robbie, that's not how business works.
We got to charge them as much as possible right away.
Yeah, that's why cigarettes cost $100 a pack.
Well, maybe New York.
Oh, that actually is true.
They're very expensive.
I was being facetious.
Oh! But that's, yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yes.
We made the right decision. Captain America is better.
And that's saying something.
Finally, I read Axis
5. Okay. Do you hear that? I'm buckling myself in. Click. All right, go for it.
I don't know what I don't that like it. This book does. It helps a little bit in this book in that the people we're following in it, for the most part, are Spider-Man and Kid Nova, young Nova.
I really like Kid Nova.
Yeah, and they're not the inverted versions of themselves. They're genuinely Spidey and genuinely Nova. And they're palling around for most of the book. And you go, oh, these people are likable. I like these characters. I like following them around and watching them deal with this kind of strange situation. And then we don't really follow them around anymore. And we see... Claw and fascist Sam Wilson, which is so crazy reading all new Captain America 1 and then reading this. And I'm like, what? Why? These characters are we supposed to enjoy them being evil? Like, are we supposed to enjoy them of all the X-Men teaming up with Apocalypse and taking over Manhattan? Are we supposed to, is this supposed to be, how's this enjoyable? Is that, it's not fun. It's not that interesting. I'm pretty sure I know how this is going to end, with Xavier in the body of the Red Skull defeating all of them. With the help of Steve Rogers and Spidey, probably.
And the power of love.
Yeah, I read this. I took the bullet for you guys. Don't read this comic book.
A lot of exasperated sighs in this episode.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. I don't even know what to say. Like, if this whole book was Nova and Spidey the whole way through, I would have been much more excited. But they don't even last through the whole book. Nova splits off from Spidey and goes off to fight Claw, your favorite new character, Eric. Claw.
Mm. Or I thought it was Clue.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's Clue. That's even dumber.
But it doesn't. No, there's. It is the height of retarded. It's the
Hulk's Hulk
thing ever.
That's how they explain it. He's the Hulk's Hulk. If the Hulk had a Hulk.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's the stupidest thing.
Yeah, he has a mohawk.
Yeah, what a badass, right?
He doesn't use G's. I'm calling! Anyone watching worth fighting? I start killing! Keep filming. Does not use G's. Only Ben Grimm should do that. Ben Grimm's the only character in the Marvel Universe who's allowed not to use G's. This is all... very positive this week. Yeah. But yeah, there you go. Now you guys know why I liked Captain America so much. Because Captain America and Axis is terrible. Silence. I don't know what to say.
It's okay. Just let your hate flow.
Let the hate. Unleash the hate. Okay. That's it for Weekly Floppies.
I think we need to take a break from all this hate in comic books.
To hate in other things?
I am gonna talk about some weird stuff.
That's fine.
That I hate.
That's good. We can do that.
Handsome Boys Hate Cast.
The hate sustains us.
Yes.
Next up is...
Your Delicious Hate.
Next up. It's time for checking in. We're out of floppies. Usually that's the saddest part of the week. Now it's like, oh, well, maybe not so. Maybe next week will be better. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Checking this part of the show, Eric, I talk about what I've been up to during the week. Eric, what have you been up to during the week?
It's been an unusual week of trying to get into some new media, and I want to talk about those things really briefly.
Okay.
And then I'll just sort of toss it over to you, because we still want to, we have a shirt to discuss.
We do have a shirt
we'll,
to discuss.
We'll finish up checking in with that, I think.
That's a good idea.
But, it's Kismet that, I assume that's how you pronounce Kismet, right? Kismet?
That's correct. That's, okay. As far as I know, that is correct.
It's a word that I learned from reading it. but it's Kismet that this was a book that Cory Doctorow, who wrote our entry for Nerd Boy Book Club, he reviewed a William Gibson novel. Same guy that did Neuromancer. I assume mm-hmm. you're familiar. It is a brand new novel called The Peripheral.
Okay.
I don't get it yet. I'm not too deep into it. As of yet, I have not enjoyed it. He made it sound amazing. So I was like, okay, Cory Doctorow, I like you. I'm going to read this. Of course, he also recommended Bone Shaker to me, which I also disliked. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tough through this one all like it. It's about people that are 3D printing drugs, apparently, and people who are they're apparently drone pilots. I don't know what's going on in this book. I kind of don't like his writing style. I never read Neuromancer, and I'm not overly familiar, so I'm gonna suffer through it and see how I feel at the back end of it.
This is an audiobook or not?
It is. I have the audiobook. But
how long is it?
It's pretty short, 14 hours.
Okay, it's not
for an audiobook. That's pretty brief. But I don't know. I'm interested to see where it goes, but it's tough for me to follow. It's a writing style that doesn't suit my reading style.
Right.
But I'll real briefly, I managed to pick up some fantastic used books I wanted to tell you about.
Ooh.
Can you see the book that I am holding?
Yeah.
Do you know what this book is?
Mm-hmm.
I am holding a copy, and unfortunately it is an updated edition from the 90s, Seduction of the Innocent. The infamous book that was the cause of the Comics Code, approved by the Comics Code. And it's a ridiculous book about how Jesus will hate you for reading comic books. And I think my favorite thing about it is there's a part at the end where they're talking about explicit sex, and they're showing a bunch of pictures of women that are not, like, the women are clothed. They're wearing clothes, and they still censor it. It's amazing.
Another book on the topic, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, Eric, The 10-Cent Plague. You ever heard that? Read it?
I have never heard of this. It sounds like...
It's a book about the Comics Code and how it, you know... It's called The 10-Cent Plague by David Hadju. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Hajdu, but it's all about that book and the Comics Code and all everything.
Just sort of a history of the whole debacle.
Yeah, basically about when that happened and how it changed comics and all that. It's very interesting.
Well, I felt like this was something I should own a copy of.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing. Seduction of the Innocent Revisited. What the hell ever, man?
What the hell?
The other thing that I got that I'm more positive about. Are you familiar with Crazy Cat?
It sounds familiar, but I can't place it.
Crazy Cat is a comic book strip from like the 20s, the early teens,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the 20th century. Obviously, you know, now's the early teens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ha, 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 it's
not
from
the early teens.
Yeah, this is Crazy Cats from Tumblr. It sounds like something on Tumblr, doesn't it? Or on YouTube.
Bit. Could be.
So as you can see, centuries are cyclical. Anyway, no, Crazy Cat is a very influential comic strip from newspapers, the funnies, if you will, from back in the teens and 20s. And I want to say people that I know, good friends of mine, were telling me that Crazy Cat is something that I should look into and understand why it's great. And also, it's a favorite of Adam Savage. So naturally, I had to get a book of this. But this is Crazy Cat, the comic art of George Harriman.
Hmm.
And I'm looking forward to going through that. But those are the things that I felt like telling you all about.
Hmm. I assume I'm supposed to speak now?
Well, you know what happens when you assume. You start talking. You sure do. You and me get some ass. That's good. I like that.
It's a much more positive outlook on it.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's like everyone wins.
I have a couple of podcasts to talk about.
You listen to podcasts? What?
I listen to a lot of them, apparently. All day. First one is comics related. It is a podcast called Stuff Said.
Mm-hmm.
It is... Oh, the host. I should have this information in front of me already, shouldn't I?
Nah, don't be prepared.
Greg Scheigel, who is a cartoonist, has worked in comics through the 90s to today. He basically just interviews comics creators. It was actually advertised on Inkstuds that I heard about it, so I checked it out. He just released his newest episode is a 2.5-hour interview with Kurt Busiek. He's worked with Kurt in the past. Kurt Busiek of Astro City, Astro City and mm-hmm. Tooth and Claw, which we read last week, right?
That was last week.
That was last week, and I mean he's also written Marvels and lots of other stuff, but. Very interesting interview. Hearing them, they talk a lot about what was happening in the 90s, the history of what happened, like Kurt Busiek's experience with comics from the 90s to today, like they went over craft a lot. It's very interesting. Anyone who's interested about how comics are made, really, really in-depth look about from two guys who actually are a writer and an artist like us. And not handsome. I don't know. I've never actually seen what Kurt Busiek looks like, so I can't speak to it. But talks about his illness that sidelined him for so long, but really good. I also listened to his interview with Mark Waid, but definitely Kurt Busiek is 2.5 hours, so it's certainly not a short one. But it does definitely go in depth. It's really fun, interesting. If you like comics, check it out. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you probably like comics.
Or you're really confused.
That too. The other podcast I want to talk about, as I don't think I've actually talked about it on the podcast, is the Alton Brown Cast.
Yeah, we've not mentioned it on the podcast, but we did talk about, we talked about barbecue for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, Alton, Eric and I had listened to when we were driving to, the con? Supercon it was?
I don't remember.
I think it was Supercon.
I remember being in the car listening to that.
Yeah, listen to his interview with John Hodgman, which is very good. If that's the thing is, he has relaunched the podcast. Mm-hmm. Same name, same art, looks exactly the same, except it's not under the purview of Nerdist Network anymore.
Okay.
I don't know why any of that happened, why he's just by himself now, not with Nerdist anymore, but who knows? But if you're looking for the John Hodgman interview, you got to find the old podcast. It's still up. I think everything's still up. But the new one only has like 4 or 5 episodes so far. But the most recent is Alton interviewing Adam Savage. I enjoy both those fellas. Mm. I enjoy both those fellas talking to each other. They mostly talk actually about movies, about film.
That sounds exactly like something Adam Savage would do.
They talk about cameras a lot. They talk about...
Like that also makes sense, knowing both those guys.
Yeah, how people shoot things. They talk about Stanley Kubrick a lot. they talk about Indiana Jones a lot. if you like those like guys, these,
it's
you're
almost
like
him. Well, it's almost like these guys are huge nerds.
It's almost like that. I think the funniest question is like Altman's like, I think he's trying to ask Adam like, you know, have you ever found yourself like, have you ever realized that you're really, really obsessed about anything? And I'm just like, I'm a serial fanaticist.
That describes him very accurately.
Yeah. So it's actually, honestly, I could have listened to them talk for much longer than what they only, I think it's only just an hour, but I could have heard him talk longer than that. But if you haven't listened to Alan Brownkast, he does not just talk about food. He, like this episode, they barely talk about food at all. They talk about, you know, film in this one mostly, but Alton has a lot of interests, and I think this is one of the ways that he tries to broach those interests by talking to different people. It's fun. Interesting. He's a very smart guy.
He is not a dummy. Let me ask you this. How's the sound and production stack up to what it was before?
It's about the same.
Is it really?
Yeah, roughly. I mean, the audio, I think it's the sound, like the voice levels, the comparison are a little bit off differently, but for the most part, it's the same and not much of a difference.
I kind of was thinking that Alton's reaction was, you know, I can produce this myself. Why am I giving whatever percent of my ad revenue to this network?
Yeah.
When it's my celebrity that people are listening to, people are going to find me anyway. I don't know. I kind of understand it, but I don't know. Alton can be kind of a dick, so it's kind of an Alton move.
I know that the last podcast had a large gap in episode releases.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. But regardless, you have to look. It's going to be listed twice in iTunes. It's very confusing to me at first. But go check it out. Great. Finally, we have to get to that shirt.
We do have to talk about that shirt. Do you want to set the scene on Shirtgate?
Yeah, Shirtgate. I really don't like what they call it.
Everyone's got to call, you know, something gate.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Mitchell and Webb sketch about Watergate Gate?
I don't think so, but I've heard of it.
You should look up Mitchell and Webb Watergate Gate.
Watergate Gate?
It's funny.
Okay, so it's good. Guys, if you've been paying attention to science news this week, you'll see that we have landed a rover, or a lander, a probe,
some sort of spacecraft.
Yeah, on a comet for the first time.
It's fucking amazing.
It's pretty impressive.
An object moving in space at that speed—that's impressive.
We've accomplished that as humanity. Yeah. That used to be science fiction, and now we've done it. But there was a live stream of what's the ESA, which what does ESA stand for? It's like European Space Agency. It's their project. And the lead scientist of the project, name is Matt Taylor.
Yeah.
Was on this live stream. He's covered in tattoos. So and he's a lead scientist of a thing that, you know, landed on a comet. So apparently he's a very smart and, you know, eclectic fellow, I'm assuming.
Eclectic is a good way to describe it.
But he's, you know, he's wearing shorts. He's wearing, like, you know, skate shoes, which, you know, something I would wear, it looks like.
Right.
Except for that shirt. His shirt he's wearing is covered with, like, really bad, like what you see in, like, Eric, describe it.
Well, it looked like sci-fi bad pinup art, and it's pretty clunky.
Looks like one of those. If like you took one of those, they were very popular in the 90s. I remember, and I'm still people still wear these shirts. You see them like
it's
the
a bowling
like,
shirt,
bowling shirt, but that's has what you know you yeah the bowling shirt, but then it had dragons on it or like.
Oh,
anime
I know
art.
What you mean. Those horrible things.
Those horrible things, but instead it has really bad art of mostly naked ladies, pinup art. Maybe a little bit offensive when you're representing your entire space agency on a momentous scientific occasion. And
I'm pretty sure if I work with this dude, I'd be like, dude, that's kind of, you know, probably shouldn't wear that. You know, give the little nudge in the ribs and be like, you want to wear a different shirt? But you sound about as exasperated about this as I do.
Well, I do want to point this out. I don't know if you're aware of this. Uh-huh. I just, looking this up before we started, he has come out and apologized.
He has, and I'm very glad that he did.
Yes.
It was a pretty bonehead thing to do.
Yes.
That being said, this whole backlash against it, what the actual fuck? You know, this shirt has not oppressed anyone or broken anyone's arm. It has not killed or maimed anybody.
Well, I think that, I mean, a lot of people are like, if you read the original Mary Sue, I think, I know I saw the article first on the Mary Sue. And they honestly don't take that. It's like they just go, "Wow, that's a really ugly shirt."
Yeah, it's not.
And yes, it is. It's yes, yeah. It's dumb. And yes, it is. It can lead people to believe that there's, as it's true, there is a misrepresentation. Like there's very little women in,
mm-hmm.
you know, science in general, science and mathematics. And but they're just like the bare biggest point is like, God, dude, that's a terrible shirt. Wear something nicer.
I don't think that was their main point, but it is something they certainly picked on him about.
Well, I mean, this is what it's. I'll read specifically the last thing that ends the article.
Yeah.
Here it is from, what's who wrote this? Victoria McNally. I could point out that one might be able to use this shirt as an example of how women in STEM fields might be made to feel indirectly uncomfortable in a male-dominated working environment despite no overt sexism or harassment being inflicted upon them. But I'm kind of too distracted by how tacky and outright terrible this shirt actually is. Like, seriously, dude, you wore that in public.
And that's... this is a blogger trying to be cute because the message from the Mary Sue, because I follow them, I enjoy their writing, but the message from the Mary Sue has been about that this is the most horrible and sexist thing that's happened this week. It's been
maybe not. I don't know.
That's been the message that I've got. There's been a lot of writing about this, a lot of people talking about it, just ad nauseum.
I haven't seen anything aside from the original.
There's like, been
I,
much.
I'd not. I didn't even so see anything. Much. I haven't seen anything since the apology.
I have seen.
I mean, like I, haven't I, have seen, s- I just realized no. he apologized. So
I have seen stuff every single day. This was like announced on Monday or Tuesday.
I didn't. I think I was aware of it the day after, I think.
The day the comet landed, they started talking about it. Because that was how I heard about the comet. Was like, oh, here's this guy wearing this awful shirt. By the way, he landed a spacecraft on a comet.
Well, not him. He helped.
I know. He's part of the team.
He's the lead scientist. He's the lead.
I know. I'm not... I know that... He's not like got a radio control. He's like
no RC
pilot. Yeah, no. I'm aware of that.
You sure?
I understand that these things don't happen in a vacuum. Yeah,
a little Atari.
He's got
an
Atari stick, of course.
And just moving it around, pushing the button, fire the rockets.
I don't know this rockabilly nerd in his stupid shirt.
Yeah, I don't. I think anything that has the word gate at the end of it.
Yeah.
That isn't Watergate.
Yes.
It's a little blown. It's generally, that means it's being blown out of proportion.
The thing that's frustrating about this is it feels like both sides of this are not taking the importance of this achievement. They're not taking it seriously enough. The one article that felt sober to me criticizing this fucking shirt, I think it was on The Verge. I'm not sure where it was, but they said the reason that I'm so critical about this is I feel like it's very important to criticize the things that I love. And I love science and rationality, and this guy is representing it, and he is doing a bad job of representing it.
Yeah, I think that's what offends me the most, honestly.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about this that I'm not going to go into. A lot of things that have been brewing in my stupid head, But I think that that's enough. You know, this is, I'm not gonna come out and be a damned MRA activist about it. But, I think everyone should be fucking ashamed of this.
Yeah.
Everyone should be ashamed of everyone and everyone else. Let's just fucking be proud that we've landed a spacecraft on a comet.
I agree. It's a momentous achievement.
Yes. High five. Double high five.
Double high five.
Mm-hmm.
We did one hand, then the other.
Yep. That's how it works.
That's how it works. So with all that vitriol, more vitriol.
Let's talk about something nice.
Let's do that. I think that'll call it a day for checking in. We move to our final segment of the week. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of the show where Eric and I will assign a longer collective work, like you do in a book club, and discuss it in depth, themes, art, like mm-hmm. like you would discuss art in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And this is both.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. This week we are doing In Real Life by Cory Doctorow and Jen Wang.
Is that how you say it? Is it Doctorow?
Doctorow?
I say Doctorow. I don't know.
I don't...
You know, we were so concerned about saying Jen Wang right.
I know.
That we didn't look up Cory Doctorow.
Cory Doctorow.
I'm pretty sure it's Cory Doctorow. How could I have gone?
I think you pronounce it Doctorow. Cory Doctorow.
So you start speaking and then you have a seizure.
Yeah, then you stop. You recover and then you finish.
And then you never say his name again.
Yes, you just know. I don't need to say his name. That gentleman.
Cory, the Canadian blogger.
Cory. His name's Cory, right?
Yes. He's one of the Corys.
In Real Life, Eric had mentioned it in his checking in segment last week. And last I week. Went, well, might as well. We might as well do it. And we just finished talking about a gate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much, but this is this story is it's very much about women in gaming, girls in gaming, because it's
specifically
a young girl,
specifically ethics in women gaming.
Yeah, ethics and women and girls in gaming.
That was really a joke, but I guess kind of.
Yeah, it really does, but it is kind of. It does, but yeah, I don't. We'll probably have to get into it just because it seems impossible not to. But we can avoid it for now. It involves a girl named Anda. Or Anda. How do you think?
I don't think it matters. She's fictional.
Is she now, though, Eric? She feels real to me in my heart.
That's cholesterol.
Oh, crap.
To be fair, people are made of cholesterol as well.
That's true, they are. But Anna is kind of this chubby girl. How old is she?
She's a teenager. She might be like 13 or something. Yeah, she might be a little bit older.
Older, early teens.
Yeah.
That's what my impression was. I don't think they ever actually come out and say exactly how old she is. But she is she's visited by a Australian lady in her classroom, who invites all the girls in the class to join her in a MMO called Course Gold, which is clearly just
It's WoW.
It's clearly World of Warcraft.
100% WoW.
And it's also appropriate because there's a new expansion for WoW. Just came out this week.
Yep, something else for me not to care about.
Our mutual friends Matt and Melissa both resubscribed to play it. It was nice knowing him.
Yeah, I know.
But she kind of delves in this world and is, like, becomes immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in this fantasy of, you know, creating an avatar that you can look however you want, of having these friends in this world of these other gaming, other girls, other women gaming that are her, you know, clan mates or whatever, however they, I don't know what semantics they use in this, I forget, but like, she quickly becomes obsessed with it. You think that's accurate?
I mean, it's an MMO. It's WoW. People are
constantly thinking about it.
Yeah.
She just kind of lives it.
She becomes a pretty typical WoW player.
Yeah, just vanishes. I mean, before that, we do see her with, like, a gaming group.
Mm-hmm.
A D&D group. So, obviously, mm-hmm. she is a nerdy person.
She has, like, all kinds of extracurricular nerd activities.
Yes, yes. And then we see the person that she's grown most attached to inside the game is, like, killing gold farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was not expecting it to go this direction, this story. Without, when you know, at face value?
Knowing, I did not, right, no, of course. But I think knowing Cory Doctorow, that's the kind of politics that he likes to sneak into things. Just seeing his talks and knowing a little bit about him,
mm-hmm.
it did not surprise me. I was like, okay, tell me about it, Cory. I don't know. It feels very real and researched, and it feels like something that he would know an awful lot about. He's a very smart guy, very plugged into the world. He was the president of the internet in Ready Player One. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I have not listened to audiobook because Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton reads it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite books, actually. Reluctantly so.
It's like such a strange thing that you... But she gets involved with the politics of they're killing all these gold farmers. They're getting paid by other gold farmers,
mm-hmm.
real money, to kill gold farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Who are, if you do not know what a gold farmer is, it's basically a person who just literally is in a MMO,
mm-hmm.
will do something repetitively. A lot of times they use bots, but bots often get caught.
Yes.
So there are now people just use real people. They pay them and it's generally people in third world countries or mm-hmm. developing countries mm-hmm. where they can pay them very cheaply and they can actually make more money than selling the gold that they collect inside of a virtual game.
Yes.
To other people who just want to level up quickly, want gold quickly. They don't want to have to work for it.
Which that's what capitalism's all about.
Yeah, I guess so. But she soon finds out that these gold farmers are people that she becomes involved with, like the real life struggles of one of them, a young Chinese man who's 16, mm-hmm. who is having life problems like you would imagine someone who is a gold farmer trying to make a living doing gold farming. And that's, we get kind of involved with that. No, but this book is very, very good. The art style really, really suits it.
Oh yeah.
Suits what they're going for. It's really fun and full of character.
It's adorbs.
Yes. Adorbs.
It is. That's exactly how you describe it. It's adorbs.
I think it's accurate, but you know, Anna runs into real life trouble with her mother and her father mm-hmm. of getting paid money. As a young teenage girl, they're a little suspicious when money just gets deposited randomly.
Yeah.
That can, yeah, I understand the position.
I think it's really weird her dad is Guillermo del Toro.
I was about to, yeah, he is Guillermo del Toro. That's
exactly who he is.
Acclaimed director Guillermo del Toro is her father.
She's half, that makes her half Mexican.
Yeah. If it is actually Guillermo del Toro.
I like to think that it is. She's half Mexican. I'm behind that.
Is that canon now? We've decided?
I have decided that she is, and that's, her dad is Guillermo del Toro.
And I think it's interesting to me that the gold farming plot is the thing that really is the main story of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Like and I was at face value, I'm like, it's about a young girl body issues, like, you know, dealing, creating an avatar, letting yourself look like whatever you like, plus, you know, how gaming culture is, has trouble with young women and stuff like, but it really doesn't touch on that. I mean, it's about that, but it's not necessarily, it's about her dealing with this issue in a game, but not necessarily about her trying to find a place in gaming culture. Because it's an all women, I think they just go, oh, it's an all women guild that she's in the game. And they just kind of make it, that's what it is. Yeah.
They skirt a lot of the bullshit, you know, tits or get the fuck out, suck my cock horse shit that I am sure happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I really don't want to discuss Gamergate because it's terrible and I'm tired of it because it's still around.
Was it you that was talking about the Adam Savage interview when he discussed Gamergate? Because I really liked what he said about it.
And it was not me. I heard what you were talking. I think I heard.
I don't remember if we've discussed it or not, but he said something that I thought was very insightful, which was, you know, why do these men feel like so? What is the word I'm trying to think of?
Threatened?
Not even threatened, because it's not about being threatened, but it's just, why are they? It's not about seeing something else, but it's about, like, they feel like their life is so bad that they have to lash out this way.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't.
That they feel themselves hurt and oppressed.
Yes.
You know? And that, I mean, dude, don't laugh. I mean, so many people turn to nerd culture because they see themselves as outsiders and they seek solace in it, which is one of the reasons why. I mean, have I told you about my brother's research?
Maybe.
We can touch on this briefly since we're talking about, but his whole thing was he's trying to understand male aggression and aggression against women and feminine targets in regard to video games. And he has not released any findings. He's not said anything forward or against it. He is very upfront with the fact that he likes video games and has played them his whole life. Has had huge backlash against him. All of the people that have commented on his web pages have been like, fuck you, stop talking about video games. It is a sacred cow that people do not like to have discussed, because it is, and I mean, obviously some terrible things have happened, but these people, you know, they're probably sick and sad and depressed and feel like the only thing they can do is lash out against someone that they see is weaker than them. And that's what this devolved into.
Well, that's what I mean. I understand, like, I understand that it's supposed, like, nerd culture is that's when I was a teenager. That's where I went to, but yes. I've become a regular person and thought, well, I understand that it's for everyone can participate.
That's the thing that
I don't even know how to, like, Camille Nanjiani, a comedian. Mm-hmm. Who does a video game podcast with his wife, Indoor Kids, it's mm-hmm. called. I listen to it. They are average gamer, you know? They don't, you know, they play all kinds of games. They don't, you know, but they're not super into, like, they're not gonna go nitty gritty on any kind of game. They're gonna say, oh, I really liked it. They can talk about why they like something. They can talk about, you know, what a game is about. They can talk about the legacy of a certain type of game, but they're not going to be the person talking about frame rates per second or,
yeah, let me show you stuff like benchmarks,
stuff like that. And like Kumail on his Twitter, he's like, they are very anti-Gamergate, like rational people are. And he's like, people keep calling me social justice warriors. All three of those words are good. I should be happy.
That's the cutest response.
Yeah, and
did you ever see the social justice wizard buttons that people were making?
No.
I like that. That was social justice rogue. Social justice fighter.
That's good.
Yeah.
I do like that.
Pretty good.
But he's like, back to your point, like, he was talking about, he's like, every time he thinks about it, his solace is like, the people who are so full of this vitriol and this anger are just, like, they're honestly probably very sad people. That, like, that's their lives.
Right.
Like, that's the reason that this is all they have.
No, it's so true. You know, when you feel like everyone is just kicking the shit out of you, all you're going to do is find someone that you feel is lower than you. And to people who have just been pumped full of misogyny their whole life, of course that's what they're going to fucking do. Fuck you, lady.
Yeah. We cannot. I don't want to get too far away from the comic, but
no, we're getting pretty far away from it.
We had to address it. I think we're talking about girls in gaming, and
yeah,
I really want it just to disappear, but yeah. It's just a process. It's going to take time.
It will take the fact that it's more, it's better than it was, arguably, you know, and I think that. I don't know. We're going to have to be brave, and I know that's an asinine thing for me to say because I'm, you know, I'm 6 feet tall and male. I don't fucking have to be brave at all.
No, you just have to, like, be an ally.
Yeah. I want to try to be. I feel like, you know, it's important for us gentlemen to be nice about things and be inclusive, but it's going to take a lot of bravery because it's not going to go away overnight.
Now for something completely different.
Yeah, this book that we were supposed to be talking about.
Yeah. How would you describe Jen Wang's art style? My standard Eric question.
I've never wanted to hug lines so much in my life. This is the cutest fucking book, I swear. It's really good and dynamic. She's really very good at drawing these stylized characters, mm-hmm. You know? It's like a completely, it's like devoid of geometry, you know? It's a complete abstraction of a human face, but it's done so skillfully that you feel like the head's rotating in space. It makes me think of an old Penny Arcade strip. I forget what those guys' names are. He goes by Gabe. I think his name is Mike. I think it's Jerry and Mike. Mike is the artist. I think I would know these names, considering that Penny Arcade is huge.
I can't remember either, so don't worry about it.
Anyway, he was too... He could not draw... He could not draw Gabe with his head leaning back. He didn't know how to do it because it's completely... I mean, it's complete made-up anatomy, you know, his right. cartoons. And he couldn't figure out how to... And Mike Waringo, do you know Mike Waringo?
Yes.
Much beloved artist, died a couple years ago. But he, Mike was talking about how he couldn't draw it, and Mike Waringo basically rushed in, showed him how to draw this weirdo anatomy and make it look right. And it's astounding to look at, because she is clearly, I don't know, it's like on a complete, it's on such an upper level, it's amazing. You know, it's...
Mm-hmm.
How something can look dimensional but also be so abstracted at the same time. It's impressive.
No, I don't know. I the thing that's most interesting to me is the contrast between the two worlds, between the world, the real life world versus coarse gold.
Yes. Called. Wow.
Wow. And wow. How the I think it's the not this isn't necessarily art decision, but I'm sure. I mean, it's partially that, but the image, the character she creates in this world is very different than what she is in real life. And when you play an RPG, Eric, do you have like a go-to kind of character you build? Whenever
we're
those
talking
kind of games,
about, yeah, we're talking like a, about like a Skyrim,
Mass Effect as well. Yeah.
I just try and draw myself. I've literally done that for Fallout 3, Mass Effect, and Skyrim. I've made a guy that looked like me.
I generally just try to make guys who are ugly.
That's funny.
My first playthrough, I just like, I'm going to make a really ugly guy.
You know, I'm not going to name her, but my ex-girlfriend, you met her.
Mm-hmm.
We used to play Mass Effect 2 together, and her favorite, like, it was like her hobby was making femships. I think that the avatar means nothing to a guy. It is so important, in my experience, to women. Shockingly important.
I was, when I, we actually, before we started recording, Kim and I, my fiance,
you beat me to the punch.
We were playing Borderlands pre-sequel. We actually finished the main story quest right before. And you are creating characters. There's four, and the first four, they'll release more as Borderlands, they do. They release more characters,
of course.
But the first four, they're all villains from Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
But you have a Claptrap, who's like a joke. Then you have Wilhelm, who's like a robot dude. And then you have two ladies. So there's more ladies than men.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim was blown away by this. She is actually generally excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally when we are picking characters, like, she goes, oh, I have to pick the only, like, she feels like almost obligated.
Yeah, I have
to
pick the girl.
The
like,
girl.
What? I have
she wants,
choice?
I want to play. Yeah, she's like, oh, there's more than one I can pick. I'm like, you pick which one you want. I'll pick whatever one you don't want. Although I did say I kind of wanted to play the one with the shield.
Yeah. Because you told me this because you're Steve Rogers.
Yes, exactly. But I think that backs up your sentiment that yes, it's. Although I did play Mass Effect through my second playthrough as Femshep, so.
Femshep's a solid choice.
I think the voice actor's better.
Oh, God, Jennifer Hale is awesome. Every time I see her in a cartoon, I'm like, fuck yeah, Jennifer Hale. She's pretty raw. She's pretty rad.
Yeah. But I think that book, that and then the fact that she eventually dyes her hair red in real life.
I am. This is like a meme. I don't understand.
It kind of is that.
It
that,
really
that,
is
that, in that part of that book.
Well, it's a societal meme. What is with all these ladies dyeing their hair like this red? I mean, think about all the women in our life system, in your and my social circles, that have this. It struck me first at Dragon Con, as we were hanging out with three women. With their hair dyed red, watching a woman speak with her hair dyed red. What is the deal?
There you go.
I know, I'm an embarrassment. But seriously, I don't know, man. I'm really curious what the root of this is.
Well, I mean, like, I think, well, at least in this book. I'm not going to try to analyze society.
Well,
but
I know.
In this book, she is the kind of the wallflower.
Yeah.
The no one notices her. Her friends see her.
Yeah.
No one else. She gets the red hair.
Yeah.
Everyone looks at her.
Yeah. No. Exactly. This is a little bit of her trying to step out and be a little more confident and saying, notice me, whatever. I get that.
Yeah.
It's a very adorable scene. I'm just really curious what, I mean, is that what women are saying? Or is it just like, I want my hair to be a weird color?
Probably, yeah.
Because so many of these same women have had blue or pink hair at one
time. I think
one point
I can,
in,
I can, in my example, my fiance also dyes her hair red.
Yes.
I know exactly why she does it, because red's an acceptable color at work.
Yes.
She works in an office. She can't have blue hair. She still wants to have different colored hair.
Yes.
So she picks red because you can still have red can be kind of a different color, but it's acceptable socially because it's a natural color as well.
Well, Crayola red is not a natural color.
I understand that, but it is close enough that it skirts it.
I know.
Yeah.
All you redheads out there.
Yeah.
You can cram it.
Okay, we're just making enemies this podcast.
I know, Jesus Christ. People are going to blow me up. A bunch of redheads that write terrible comics are just going to slit my throat.
You better hope that the guy who writes Bigger Bang isn't a redhead.
I'll buy him a beer or something, I don't know.
I think that's fair. The issue of the gold farming, do you think... I mean, this is an issue, like a real life
problem.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. It's.
Do you think... We don't either of us dispute that. Do you think that this... I mean, it's a young adult comics book.
Mm-hmm.
I think its target is a younger audience. It's not necessarily, although anyone can read this and enjoy it. I certainly liked it a lot.
Yep, Dudes with Podcasts, that's its audience.
Yeah, but do you think that it works as like a social issue? Like it like reveals this as like and gives it the seriousness that like the fact that it ends like with this Chinese guy making like a Prince Charming avatar at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was a cute ending. You know,
okay.
I liked that, and you know, it fits with the story. I mean, the whole world is about silly fantasy and being, you know, something other than something that would happen in real life. It's just it's escape, you know. I don't mind that it has this fairy tale ending.
Okay.
And I think it almost sounds like your criticism is, you know, is this given the gravitas that it needs? I think that it is, and I think that I think it's successful as sort of the engine of conflict.
Okay.
In this story. I like it a lot. I like that it goes there. I like that it's political, but not in a Grant Morrison, everyone should be vegetarian sort of way. It's not heavy-handed. It's got kind of an amazingly light touch, honestly. Like, it's not, it doesn't rub, like, body shaming in your face, or I think probably the clunkiest part. And the only reason it's clunky is because I've heard so much about, you know, exclusivity and nerd culture, is when all the boy nerds are like, oh, girl, we're not going to play Jenga with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard you be like, ugh, regular board games.
This guy is Robbie, except a little bit meaner. It's not directed at just women.
Oh, I know.
At anyone. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't want to play Monopoly. Go away.
I think if a dude walked up to you and said this, you would be like, fuck you, dude.
I wouldn't say that. I would say, hey, let me show you another game.
Well, then you're a better person than I thought you were. Good.
I would not say, no, we can't play it. I would say, well, let me show you another game. See what you think about it. To be fair, I did play a game when I participated in the Extra Life Gaming Marathon called Cat Tower.
Yeah, that's a very...
That is...
It's a very...
It is Jenga. It's Jenga, but with cats. Like, so I'm not... Jenga's a fine game. There's nothing wrong with Jenga, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's a dexterity game. If you like dexterity games, it's fun. It's a fun game.
Anyway, so
board game hour with Eric and Robbie.
We do have our tangents. It's okay. We're people that talk about things.
I agree with you about the ending.
Yeah.
I know. I didn't think it was clunky at all.
No.
Undercut the
for
the
right
the political. I was just that. I mean, that is a criticism I've seen out there. That, but frankly, the amount of, I think the amount of quote unquote gravitas given to it is a quite large amount for what is basically a a book about a girl's experience in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it can expose so much, honestly, and give it true kind of depth,
yeah,
is a testament to the book.
Oh,
not a detractor.
I'm shocked that there's no health insurance in China. That doesn't make sense.
Why?
I mean, I don't understand how you can have like a communist country without a social safety net. I guess I really don't know much about China.
It's a very complicated country.
Apparently so.
Very complicated. I don't know very much at all either. Mm. From what I have listened to just on programs about it on NPR and, you know, reading articles online, it's a very, you know, it's so big.
Mm.
There's so many people there. Mm. It's such a contrast between the urban cities and the rural areas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even, I mean, it's like traveling back in time in some places.
Of course.
Like, and people, we say that about America, but that's not really true about most of America.
No, it's not.
Like, even in the most rural, I mean, I grew up in the woods down a dirt road. Everyone still had cable TV and electricity. And it was very, very poor people. We all still had television.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know. So the people in very rural China are, you know, might as well be 100 years ago. And that's I think that's, it's a country that's changing so quickly that I do not know. I'm not going to profess to know a ton about the country, but it is a very interesting and complex set of issues surrounding China.
I think I can see eye to eye with that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, but they certainly do not, their workers' rights and are
no,
pretty abysmal.
That's obviously true. One of the, the general manager, one of the ex-general managers that I worked with was telling me about, there are literally boats, because they ship product, from like factories in China. Like if it's like a t-shirt or something made out of fabric, they will ship it on boats with seamstresses manning the ship. And on the 2-week journey to, you know, wherever its destination is, they have people on board sewing because it's more efficient. Why is this cute little book bumming us out so much?
It has some heavy issues in it.
Yeah.
But I think they're broached pretty well, and I think that's his intent, is to try and make people aware of this, and I think it succeeds on that.
I feel like we've talked about a lot of the issues and kind of not a lot about the book.
No, I know, but it's hard to discuss it without. I think Anda is a very interesting character. I think she's the fact that, you know, we have a male writer who is managing to write a young female character, and it's, you know, it's very, it feels genuine.
Yeah, it is. You know, he's a startling large amount of empathy, and he's really in the head of this little girl. She's very good as the protagonist of this book. She's not necessarily the kind of character I would want to see a series of books about, but she's still wonderful as the lead of this book.
And I mean, we have like mentioned a lot of these issues surrounding this book, like the issues that it confronts about. But the fact it is, like Eric mentioned earlier, a light touch. Mm. This is all. There's a lot of subtext in this that delivers these messages without hitting you over the head with it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't go any... It's never like in this special episode of whatever.
Yes.
It's never like the after-school special feeling. You always, like, the body image thing of her choosing her avatar and then dyeing her hair and mm-hmm. all that stuff. Very... It's never... Like, a lot of these things are just like... Well, it's a showing, not telling. A lot of showing and not telling. It's very artfully done.
Yes. I actually don't know if Cory Doctorow has ever done a comic book before. If this is his first, then I think we need much, much more from him, because this is top shelf stuff. Honestly, it is good. It is really good.
Apparently, IDW did adapt some of his short stories for comic books.
Not the same thing.
Not the same thing. You're correct.
But, not the same thing.
But they did have they were in comics. I mean, and the fact that let me look at the credits. I don't think it ever says. You know, store like writing writer Cory Doctorow in art Jen Wang. It says just by Doctorow and Wang. So I'm assuming that is, you know, in a true collaboration
mm-hmm.
that Jen was involved in the storytelling and choices along that line as well. So he's written a lot, but the fact that, you know, she's a more established artist and she could. Maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say that she did, you know, but having someone who has done it, someone who's more experienced in the medium.
I think he wrote this Marvel style. In which he didn't write it at all, and he just described it to her vaguely, and she wrote it herself.
Hey, Jack Kirby, write me a comic book.
Yeah.
There's four guys. And one's a chick. They go to space. They go to space and something happens and then they get powers.
Yep.
Hey, Jack Kirby, draw that for me. No, but I think that's... and I don't want to dismiss this comic by discussing the issues, the issues that it tackles.
Mm.
But the fact that it raises questions about those issues, I think, is a goal of the comic. I'm certain that... You know, bring that making, you know, people talk about girls in gaming and, you know, labor issues in third world countries and all that. I think that is a goal. And the fact that it is creating that discussion is also a testament to the book. And it is very nice looking. We haven't really talked about the art a bunch, but it.
I yammered about it, but no, it's, you did, it's but... glorious. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful. I like Sir.
I would recommend this to pretty much anyone.
Yeah. No, it's delightful.
I would not put a caveat on it. I would say anyone who likes comics, if you want to read a comic, this is a good one to read.
Can I ask you something sort of as an exclamation point to this discussion?
Oh yeah, sure.
I feel like
I'm excited.
Now. Oh, this is it's not all that dramatic.
Oh, okay.
But it could be for some people, because I was just looking at the cover, this adorable little Felicia Day blurb.
Oh, okay. All right.
The word gamer.
Yeah.
You're someone you play video games and you are.
Yes.
You could. I think. In terms of the demographic, you identify more with the sort of hardcore culture. At least you're more likely to play a game for 180 hours, or, you know, like you played the Shadow of Mordor, the Fallout 3, the Mass Effect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you played games on the Super Nintendo. You did it before. It was cool. You are very much like. In taste of video games, I would imagine, a lot of these same gamer guys that have been, you know, creating this huge backlash against feminists on the old internet.
Sure.
Do you think it even makes sense going forward, in going into the future, gamer? Does it even make sense to identify as a gamer?
I want to say that we talked about this in our Dragon Con episode.
I wouldn't doubt it. But I don't
like,
because
there's an article that was when Gamergate was just starting.
Was it really?
Really?
Really been that long?
The birth of it, because it was just coming out about the insanity.
Yeah.
And there was an article about the death of the gamer.
Yes.
And I think we talked about it briefly. But
I remember this. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. I remember that article. I don't remember the discussion.
I think we didn't talk about a lot, but we talked about some. I don't even know if we did it on air. I know we talked about it at Dragon Con. The term calling someone a gamer is, like, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
Like,
the more it goes on, the more mainstream video games become. It's asinine. It's like, I don't know, you're going to call yourself, I'm a movier.
I like movies. Yeah, everyone likes movies.
Yeah.
The people who don't, that's the, just, when someone doesn't like a movie, that's when you say it. Yeah. You don't need to say, oh, I don't like, if, and I, again, it is a relic of that, this is my precious thing, I have to make it so that it's special, and I'm special. I'm a gamer, you're not. I recently saw a really interesting article about people who Gone Home. I checked in with Gone Home before on this podcast, and calling it, people upset about people calling it a game, where you, like, you are just walking through a story where it's no necessarily, there's no fighting, there's no punching, you don't kill anything, there's no end boss. The experience is you walk through a story and you experience the story through a first person perspective, and there's many other games like this, and it's more becoming more and more common now. That's one that's done very artfully. Stanley Parable is another one, which is more metatextual about the nature of video games, but it's the same thing. There's no end boss. You just kind of run around and experience what's happening. You don't jump on Goombas.
Neither mushrooms nor racial slurs.
No, neither of those things. It's part of the same thing. That's not a game. And it's inherent to the history of gaming, of what games have been for a long time, of how we define a winning condition, of how you win a game. And why we have lives when we, it's all like, it's such a strange thing that all these things are still like so inherent to what people call video games, is when it's just about what arcade could do to make people pay more money.
Mm.
Like, that's the fact that is also part of it. Like, it is so limiting to what we should call a video game. Like, it is just another form of storytelling.
Yeah.
And no, I don't think it makes no sense to, for, you know, from Candy Crush and Farmville, their games, they're simple games that are this, like, the basically the new model for arcades, where they just try and hook you and, you know, try and hit those exact time where you need a progression. So you, yeah, I need that now and now.
I would recommend you listen to the You Are Not So Smart About Video Games, and the one about, oh, what's it called? The sunk cost fallacy, where they talk about Farmville.
Right. I've just recently heard someone talking about how, oh, it was on the Cracks podcast about, that's what it was. The most recent Cracks podcast, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That last episode, they talked about how scientists have kind of, that game designers have,
oh, yeah.
What people have, you know, psychologists and the like have found out about what we need to, well, mm-hmm. how humans crave progression and,
oh yeah,
and rewards and stuff like that. And I need to listen to that.
That's good. It's interesting.
But it doesn't make any sense to try and limit what these definitions, and most, in a couple generations, like, yes, there are still people around, a lot of people around, seniors and older adults, who don't play video games.
Mm-hmm.
Never even touched one. They, you know, but in a generation, two generations.
Yeah.
Not, that's not going to exist anymore.
Right.
Like, it's not going to, there's, everyone has going to be, like, I don't know what kind of phones we're going to have, what kind of mobile devices are, what they'll be in two generations.
I don't think it's going to be a phone.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I can't define it, but
whatever device we're going to be playing games on, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. It's going to be, it's already ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Everyone with a touch phone has games on it and plays them from time to time, even if they're simple. Mm. They're just, you know, they're sitting at their desk during their lunch break. They'll play a game, even if they don't, they're not a gamer.
Yes.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
But that, they play games. That's the same thing. Because their definition of what a fun game is different from yours. Does not.
Well, I mean, I think it may become the video game version of, you know, you like Michael Bay movies and I like Wes Anderson movies.
I like both, honestly. There's a place for both.
So you like Ninja Turtles?
I like The Rock.
The Rock is a good movie.
Michael Bay. I like Bad Boys. Bad Boys is a Michael Bay movie.
You ain't seen Bad Boys 2.
I've seen Bad Boys 2. I know. Hot Fuzz. I understand why they have that blurb on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Felicia Day blurb. Because they know who they're targeting.
Well, I feel like it almost feels like, hey, can we use your name on this cover? And then they wrote exactly what they thought would sell the book.
I think Felicia Day just went, I would love to do that, because maybe she read it and said, yes, I'll.
Yeah.
She's happy. She is. And I'm fine. She is.
Right.
Yeah. Felicia Day is.
I'm fine with it.
I like Felicia Day.
I know. She's just like this book. I want to hug her too.
But this is a great comic book. You guys should read it. If you haven't read it already.
Read it and you will talk about all kinds of stuff that has nothing to do with comics. That's what happens when you read this book.
But this is a great book, and don't take the fact that we didn't necessarily discuss what happens in the comic. But this comic does engender interesting discussion about these issues.
Yeah, it's deceptive how simple it is.
Yeah,
there's a whole world of richness below that surface.
Yeah, very artful.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
tremendous, excellent book.
So next week, folks, for Nerd Boy Book Club, we are doing Hush. Jeff Loeb and
you hush. Sorry,
I should have seen that coming. I didn't.
I know.
But Jeff